Namah Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Patrale Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Samaniti Namani Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nivishesha Shanyavari Vastu Chade Siddharani. No, I don't think that was it. But anyways, I remember yesterday morning I was speaking about the boat and how the acharyas leave behind the boat for others, for your other devotees, as the prayer goes, your other devotees to cross. And I didn't exhaust the topic, but I did speak at length about that concept of how the acharya leaves the boat behind in the form of bhakti movement, and that for those of us who are followers of Srila Prabhupada, we should aspire to stay in the boat by following the very basic practices that he gave us to follow to keep our hearts pure, our motives pure. And I just thought it was just now that I remembered that I quoted one verse, although this wasn't what I was talking about. I quoted one verse in answer to Lakshminath Prabhu's question. And I thought it might be nice, since it's a very nice verse. It's another classic Prabhupada. I like classic Prabhupada verses, and I mean commentaries. Sometimes classic Prabhupada verses too, because Prabhupada translates sometimes, and people sometimes challenge that he's not literal in his translation. And sometimes Prabhupada will put words in the translation that you won't find in the word-for-word commentary. The word-for-word meanings, I mean. Sometimes he may even put in a whole sentence in different places. And Prabhupada's purpose for that is obvious to anybody who's devoted to his teachings, that they can understand that Prabhupada in no way changed the essential meaning of the verse, but like everything he does, he always tries to make everything more accessible to those, to his readers and to his audience. I mean, that was Prabhupada's classic method of distribution. Yesterday we said that one of his ways of making bhakti accessible, we gave it not only in reference to Srila Prabhupada, but in reference to anyone who wants to make bhakti accessible to others, that the best way to make it accessible is by embodying whatever you speak. And in this way, when people see that whatever you're presenting, you are also following, then this makes it accessible, because a lot of times people are looking for examples. And Prabhupada would quote the verse oftentimes, Yad yad acharati sheshtasta tarive turojana saya pramanam guru te loka stambhavartade, that whatever actions are performed by great men, then common men will follow in his footsteps. And whatever standards he sets by his exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So even Krishna comes to show by his example and form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu how to be engaged in pure loving devotional service. An example is given how previously Krishna, when he came, he set a condition and he said, surrender and abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. But he presented it and taught it in a theoretical way, and therefore he had to come back again as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take the theoretical way of how to surrender to him by practicing it himself and showing this is surrender by embodying the highest personification of pure devotional service, none other than the mood of Srimati Radharani, who fulfilled all the components of surrender. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary to the verse, Sarva Dhammam Parityaja Mamaikam Saranam Braja. He says in the next verse that Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskuru. He said that in that verse, always think of me, worship me, offer your homage unto me, and surely you will come to me. He says this verse, Krishna is giving what all the components are of surrender, as mentioned in the previous verse. This is it. This is all the components of surrender. Absorb your mind in thoughts of me, always think of me, always worship me, always offer your words of glorification of me. Surely you will come to me. So Krishna said, yes, he instructed it, but he took the theoretical concept out of it by coming and teaching by his example. And therefore, by coming and teaching by his example, Rupa Goswami says, Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prima Pradayate, that Lord Chaitanya was the most merciful incarnation because he came and made accessible what no other incarnation ever came and make so easily accessible before, pure love of God, by showing himself how to, what are the symptoms, what are the components. And when one sees it, then one says, oh yes, here's an example, and now I'm convinced that it's possible. It's not just simply theoretical anymore. It's something achievable, attainable, because here's an example. Prabhupada made bhakti accessible in this way because whatever he spoke, whatever he preached, he was perfectly following himself. In fact, I oftentimes tell the story, experience I had. It's many years ago, but it's relevant. Of a program I was asked to do in, it was then called the Kripalu Ashram in Western Massachusetts. And the teacher at the time, his name was Yogi Amrit Desai, and who's actually very favorably disposed towards Prabhupada, and he met with Prabhupada, I think it was in 1976 in Mumbai, 1975, I can't remember which year it was. Anyways, he had his ashram in Western Massachusetts. And one time he invited us to come to his ashram. He told his followers that he could invite us to come. He said, tell them they're welcome to come and they're welcome to chant, but no lecture. And were you there? It was Yagya, were you with that?
No, I wasn't there.
You weren't there?
No, no, I wasn't there.
Okay, I thought maybe you might have been there. And that was his, why, I don't know. I still don't know why he said no lecture, but I guess he just didn't, I guess he didn't want his followers too much exposed to something that could potentially distract them from whatever they were doing at his ashram. Well, it's interesting the way it panned out. That's my story. That so we went. That was a group of about maybe 7-8 of us. We went for kirtan, and we arrived, and they had about 300 followers there, and they had a program prior to our coming in to the to their temple room, and they were chanting Om Jai Jagadish Hare, doing arti, and then we were invited to lead kirtan, and but the Yogi Amrit Desai wasn't there, and at that time, So we started the kirtan, and all the followers were really enthusiastic. They really took part in the kirtan, started dancing. And then somewhere during the middle of the kirtan, he kind of entered in the room and really kept a composure, like detached composure, like, this is for you to have, but this is not for me. And so he sat down and on his little asan there and kind of watched us having kirtan with his followers and remaining somewhat detached from the scene. And then one devotee went over to him and put out his hand and said, you know, come. And he did. He got up and then he started dancing and twirling and dancing like a madman. And so, of course, as soon as he started doing that, then all his followers really went wild. And the kirtan went on for at least another hour, very enthusiastically. And then, after the kirtan, he kind of sat down in his seat and he said to me, he said, okay, go ahead, speak. So, I didn't expect it, but I recalled the conversation he had with Prabhupada. And in his conversation, he was somewhat skeptical about Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness, that he thought that, you know, that he said he had been skeptical, that how could somebody go and teach these strict principles of bhakti in the West and expect people to follow it. You know? And remembering that comment that he made to Prabhupada in the conversation, I decided to speak on the topic of how Prabhupada made bhakti accessible. And I was speaking on this point that, yes, Prabhupada could be very strong, he could set high standards, he could set the bar, because he walked his talk, and he did everything that he was speaking about. And because he showed that perfect example in uncompromising way, in presenting Krishna consciousness, people could see that, all right, let's follow this strict process of Krishna consciousness, because when anybody strictly follows the process of Krishna consciousness and is Krishna conscious, then generally what happens is people who are at least a little bit introspective, they might start to think, yeah, I'd like to become like that. Or I'd like to be like that. I'd like to be happy like that. Peaceful like that. And because Prabhupada's whole demeanor was one of transcendence. I mean, here was a Vaikuntha man, you know, somebody who was just not of this world. And therefore, because of his example, these are the things I was presenting, that therefore Prabhupada could present the principles of bhakti yoga strictly, because yeah, Amrita Sai's challenge was how you will get them to give up these things. They're from West. They won't be able to give up. How will they follow these strict practices of Vaishnavism? And then he listened very attentively. And after, I didn't speak long. I spoke for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then he spoke. And he just glorified Prabhupada. I mean, just... And he said, actually, he told his followers that if you want to learn bhakti, you'll have to go to the followers of Bhaktivedanta Swami. And so the point is that Prabhupada could set a high standard because he made Krishna consciousness so attractive by his example. And therefore, just by seeing him and hearing him, he was making bhakti accessible. There's a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami glorifies Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an ocean of transcendental mercy. And he says, although the subject matter of bhakti is very difficult to understand, nonetheless he made it so very easily accessible in this age of Kali. And in the same principle, that the way of making bhakti accessible is by being an example. And there's much more I could say about this point, and actually there's some things, stories I could tell from my readings in Prabhupada Lilamrita and other books I was, but I'll try to get to that maybe a little bit later. But back to the point about why Prabhupada sometimes took these verses and put words in there. His purpose was to make it accessible, to make everybody understand in an uncompromising way that the way he presented the Krishna consciousness movement is authorized, and it's perfectly in line with the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, with Shastra, with our previous acharyas, and therefore sometimes he would add some words to help us understand how what his presentation of Krishna consciousness is the same as that you find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this way, he never changed the essence of the verses, but he elaborated on them. And sometimes, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, I know sometimes he was questioned about this, and he actually explained how Prabhupada also, sometimes he took different meanings of the words that were there in the verse and just changed it in a way that, again, making it accessible to the Western mind. So, when I speak about Prabhupada's classic verse and classic purports, classic Srila Prabhupada, you know, that I refer to this word as classic, is Prabhupada essentially is just, out of his deep compassion, is just making devotional service so much, so eager to make it so accessible for anyone to take up. And we see how successful he was, obviously. That, and maybe I will use the example that I was thinking of from my readings in Prabhupada Lilamrita. I've spoken about this recently. I was really meditating on Prabhupada's early days when he first came to the West in America, in New York, and how he struggled in the beginning and where he ended up preaching Krishna consciousness. And I took these different books that I was reading, and I was, as I said, cross-referencing the different impressions that the early devotees had of Srila Prabhupada in the very, very early days, and how they related their experiences of their exchanges with Prabhupada and how they became attracted to Krishna consciousness. And I saw that it was so clear that many of the early devotees, they were just attracted to Prabhupada and they were clueless. Literally. Clueless of what everything was all about, you know. I mean, they had no concept of Sampradaya, you know. Here comes Prabhupada, you know, his spiritual master, you know, and nobody to, you know, introduce here as a bona fide spiritual master. He came on his own merit, and of course he had the whole parampara behind him, and Krishna himself too, and he prayed very intensely for Krishna to please manifest himself in the words he would speak to those who would hear his message. And obviously Krishna appeared. But what really, for me, for my mind, and captivated me, was especially, I mean, after he left, he was uptown for a while. Of course, he was in Dr. Mishra's ashram for some time. He stayed in Dr. Mishra's ashram uptown. And then it's explained how Prabhupada After some time being there, he felt a little compromised, and he didn't like feeling compromised in Dr. Misha's office, because Dr. Misha was impersonalist, and he was trying to, you know, mold Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness in a way that was in line with his way of thinking. And of course, Prabhupada never conformed. But anyway, he decided he would move out of the ashram of Dr. Misha, and he got a room upstairs. And in that small room, he lived for a while, you know, doing his translations and meeting people. And the room was a very, very small room, and few people would come up at a time. And Prabhupada would sit and have a Bhagavad Gita class a few nights a week, and he'd sit and preach to people. And then he got his typewriter and manuscript stolen in from that small room. And then Prabhupada was able to ascertain that the janitor had actually stolen it. And so he was thinking that it's time to move on and find another place. And then after that, then the place that opened, because Prabhupada was so dependent, you know, that whatever Krishna gave him, and I oftentimes think of that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita where it describes the symptoms of a devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking himself lower than the straw on the street. Lord Chaitanya says that more tolerant than the tree means that the devotee, he never asks anyone for anything, and he accepts whatever is given to him, or whatever it may be. But and he, as the example is given, if the tree is drying up, it will never ask anyone for water. Or if someone comes and breaks the branch, the tree will never complain. And Lord Chaitanya himself gave the example that the devotee, when he practices devotional service with this mentality, then it nourishes, that such a behavior nourishes his devotional service. And so Prabhupada, also in these days, he was so tolerant and so completely dependent on Krishna that whatever became available to him, whatever was offered to him, he would just accept it. And so he was offered this loft in the Bowery by, I can't remember who the name of the person was, to offer him that loft. He just so happened he had a loft, but he was moving someplace else, and he was renting it with one other person. So he said, "You can have my space in the loft and go down there and stay there." So Prabhupada took that up, and that place, of course, in the Bowery, was all, you know, at that time, I think mostly immigrants from, I can't remember which countries they were that were living there, and derelicts and dropouts from society. And when you think about, you know, the people that were coming to Prabhupada in that loft, they were, you know, most of them were hippies. After he left the uptown section of Manhattan and went down into the Bowery, you know, the people with the spork, with the suits and ties, didn't see so many of them. It was young hippies. And I remember, actually, I can't remember what year it was. It might have been, I didn't meet Prabhupada, but I went with my friend. I was a young teenager. We decided to go to New York. So we took a bus to New York. We went, it took us down to, I guess, what was it, Penn Station, where the bus terminal is?
Port Authority.
Anyways, we went down, further down. We walked into that section. At that time, of course, I knew nothing about that this is the place where Prabhupada was going to come. Or actually, Prabhupada was there at the time. And my friend and I just like immediately took a U-turn and said, "We got to get out of here." You know, it's like, that was our first impression of New York to the big city. You know, it was a really degraded place. And of course, Satsrupa Maharaj very nicely depicted it in Lilamrita, the kind of low class people that were living there at the time, and hippies. And Prabhupada, in the loft, people were coming, and he did his regular Bhagavad Gita classes in the evenings. kirtans first, and three evenings a night did his Bhagavad Gita classes, and people started to come. And the real in thing for most people was the kirtan, you know. People were coming, and it was all the hippies that were coming. And then, of course, then Prabhupada would speak from Bhagavad Gita. And I know for myself, and maybe for some of my God brothers also, I mean, this is, I came from, quote, unquote, the hippie generation. And although I wouldn't say that I was a hardcore hippie, you know, I had the long hair, I had the rebelliousness of a hippie. I mean, that was one of the, for that generation, that was one of the, what's the trademark of that generation? Rebelliousness against society, values, war in Vietnam. You know, we were all, you know, in opposition. And what our main opposition was, and for the hippie generation was authority. Right? I mean, question authority. You ever remember that? I remember that. That was like, my college dormitory, and it was like a big question authority, you know. Everybody was challenging any kind of authority, whether it be one's parents, the government, society, everything like that. It was, to be a hippie meant, you know, no, don't impose your authority over us. Do what, we're going to do what we want to do. Just do it. And I even remember I lived, it was sort of like a commune in sorts, and there was a whole bunch of us hippies living together, and everybody's philosophy was like, just do what you want to do. And there was no kind of authority, because as soon as anybody imposed authority, like, forget it, you're out of here. I'm not going to accept your authority. What makes you think you're an authority? You can be an authority over the rest of us, you know. So that was hippie life. It was like no authority. And here comes Srila Prabhupada, you know, the ambassador from the spiritual world, who's the highest authority. You know, it's like, hey, put those two concepts together. You have all these hippies who are totally against authority, and bring in the emissary from the spiritual world who presents Krishna consciousness in a very authoritative way. Of course, he presented in an authoritative way, but he was like representing the highest authority. And how did you get all those hippies who were against authority to accept Prabhupada as, you know, as an authority? And most of them, they accepted it because Prabhupada's example. And that's when I started to capture that. When you read the devotees' different, you know, they're reflecting on their early experiences and exchanges with Prabhupada, that more than he was a spiritual master, what more than anything else, especially if you read Mukunda Maharaj's Miracle on Second Avenue, and Mukunda Maharaj, he makes it very clear, like that, you know, he was keeping his, he wasn't really surrendering to Prabhupada, but he came forward to do so many things for Prabhupada because Prabhupada was so genuine. That was it. He was so genuine that you couldn't refuse. When Prabhupada walked out of that loft, when his roommate went completely crazy on an acid trip, he walked out the door and he picked up his things and walked out the door, and as it says in Prabhupada, he didn't know whether to turn left or right because both were the same as far as he was concerned. He had no place to go. And then one of the persons, I think it was Carl Jurgens, and that's his name, that's not his real name, suggested to Swami, why don't you come stay with me in my loft. He had a loft also. Prabhupada accepted his invitation and went into the loft, and he was, at that time, this Carl was married, and it was just him and his wife and Prabhupada in the loft, and there was a bed, and there was a sofa, and all in the same room. And Mukunda Maharaj writes, and I think it's in Miracle on Second Avenue, that Prabhupada would oftentimes stay up all night because his roommates were also up all night. And it, And he left the rest up to the imagination of the reader of what they were doing up all night long in the bed next to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was there tolerating all this, you know, just, you know, as he did at every place he was. But then Carl Jurgen's wife, you know, saw that Prabhupada represented something that she was not so keen about, like these regulative principles Prabhupada once in a while spoke about. And she was afraid that her husband may somehow start to think that these regular principles were meant for him. And so she started pressuring him, like, you know, it's nice that you invited the Swami to our home, but, you know, like, we got to find some other place for him to go. And she started putting pressure on, and then Mukunda Maharaj took up the call at that time, and then he just, you know, decided to get a few people together, let's get some rent money together, let's try to find something. He went and he found Second Avenue. He thought this was a good place to bring the Swami. And they just, I think, you know, how it happened is, I think Prabhupada went over in the middle of the night, wasn't it? He knocked on Mukunda Maharaj's door, right? No, it was Carl who knocked on Mukunda Maharaj's door and says, the Swami's here, he needs to speak to you. And Mukunda Maharaj, he's got up, you know, like, well, it's the middle of the night, you know, why the Swami wants to speak to you. And that was when he had to get out from Carl Jurgen's flat. So he came in and he sat down and he just sat in the, and then he said, you know, well, I need a place to go and can you help? And then at that point, Mukunda Maharaj decided they had to find something for Prabhupada. So the point is, in him and in so many other people, that you really get a sense that philosophy was one thing, but it wasn't necessarily Prabhupada's philosophical presentation which changed hearts and convinced people to engage in devotional service. I mean, because if you listen to those 1966 lectures, I know I've listened to them all the time, they're jewels. They're Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada's reading from Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Rupa Natan Goswami. He's reading this in the 66. And you can imagine these people sitting there, like, and Prabhupada's talking about, you know, spontaneous devotional service in some of these classes. And, you know, it's like, they're really, I mean, but it's one thing is the philosophy, but what really, really convinced people that they want to do something for the Swami, right? Who was so detached, so humble, so tolerant, so compassionate, and so exemplary that his philosophy, although lofty for most people, people had enough brain substance to see that whatever he spoke about, he was doing. And therefore, you know, that tipped the scales in the minds of the hippies that, yeah. In fact, even when Prabhupada started talking about initiation, did I mention this yesterday? I can't remember. Most people were saying that, well, what's initiation? You know, what is it? And Prabhupada told them, well, that's when you chant on beads. And Prabhupada go out and buy some beads, and some of the early devotees, they still have their red beads. If you look, I'm pretty sure Satsrup Maharaj still has them. I've seen them with him. They went out and bought beads, and Prabhupada taught them how to string them up, and Prabhupada chanted one round with them, and that was their japa. That was their preparation for initiation. You know, this wasn't 16 rounds. It was chanting with Prabhupada with a, you know, with the japa beads. And then, and they had no concept of initiation whatsoever. But many of them said, well, you know, if the Swami says so, I guess that's what I'm going to do. It's good enough for me if the Swami says it. I mean, imagine, here you got most of the people, like, not willing to accept any authority, but they're going from this point, well, if the Swami says so, I guess I got to do it. I mean, how do you get to that point? I mean, that's what awakens faith. And that's how Prabhupada made bhakti accessible. Because without that example, they would have never, how would they have been able to make that step? If Prabhupada just came and gave philosophical lectures and, you know, and people, but they had to see a living example. And therefore, not only did they see it, but they lived with a living example. Now, Prabhupada, and it's described how, another thing about hippies I remember from the hippie days is generally hippies didn't shower so much. And then Prabhupada one day introduced to the boys sleeping downstairs, okay, now in the morning, everybody's got to get up and take a shower. All right? You know, this is... And there was only one shower. It was in Prabhupada's apartment. There was no shower in the front in 22nd Avenue. So everyone went up, and Prabhupada sometimes was standing in line, waiting to shower in the morning while the others were going in the shower. I mean, that's Prabhupada. I mean, here, that's Prabhupada. I mean, classic Prabhupada. That's it. Making bhakti accessible. You know, and they were living with him and seeing that here is Krishna consciousness. It's not a mystery. When you see it, it's not a mystery. You know, all the philosophy comes to life. And it's very convincing. And that was Prabhupada's method of distribution of Krishna consciousness. How to make bhakti accessible in everything he did. His method of distribution was not just philosophy, but his method of distribution was making it accessible by practicing it himself. And that's what Lord Chaitanya said. He said, I will come. I will make everybody Krishna conscious by practicing it myself. I'll make the whole world Krishna conscious. Yuga Dhamma Pravatama Nama Sankirtan Chari Bhava Bhakti Diya Nachamu Bhavan. I'll introduce the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. I'll make the whole world dance in ecstasy, realizing the four ecstatic mellows of loving devotional service. How did he do that? He said, I'll come and I'll teach by my example. That's the Acharya Sampradaya, as we were reading about yesterday. The Acharya Sampradaya is when the Acharya comes and not only preaches philosophy, but teaches by his example. And therefore, Prabhupada's method of distribution of Krishna consciousness was so potent that for those of us who had great fortune to see that example, it's, you know, obviously it leaves an indelible impression in the minds of anyone who comes in contact. I tell that story. I don't know, Lakshminath, maybe Gokulanandi, I'm sure you can relate to this. I tell the story of many times about the police, former police, captain of the police department, I think he was, in Montreal. Did you ever meet him before? He was captain? I said he was captain. Yeah, he said, anyways, how he, I was when Nishingananda was the temple president there. Yeah, I was there at that time. And Nishingananda came into my room and he said, there's somebody here who needs to speak to somebody. And he asked me if I would come and speak to him. And I was writing my Vyasa Puja offering. On that day, I had like an hour to write my Vyasa Puja offering, and I kind of like resisted, saying, "It's a deadline. I have to get my Vyasa Puja offering done." He said, "Oh, he says just the man just has a few questions. Maybe you can go answer them. You can go back and do your Vyasa Puja offering." So, I said I relented and I went to meet him. As soon as I met him, the man sat down, and he started talking about Prabhupada, and he said how, what year was it that Prabhupada was arrived?
68.
68?
He was for 3 months in Montreal.
But he said he met him at the airport. He says he was the captain of the police department.
Well, 1975.
75. It must have been 75. So this man said he was former captain of the police department, and he was on duty. And he started telling me all of his experiences about Prabhupada that when he saw him. And he even said to me, he said, you know, it's been a long time. I met Prabhupada. He said, I met that Swamiji. And he said, when I saw him, I was so much attracted by him, by his qualities. I could never forget them. And then he said, I wish I was intelligent enough at that time to just become his disciple. But I was a fool. And then what he did is he pulled out of his pocket, and he had a Bhagavad Gita in his pocket. And he says, you see this Bhagavad Gita? And I could see the Bhagavad Gita was really read, you know, a lot. He says, see this Bhagavad Gita? He says, you know how many times I've read it? I said, no. He said, I've read it 36 times. He said, I never go anywhere without this book. He said, and I remember he said, he gave an example. He says, sometimes my wife goes shopping. And my wife, when she goes shopping, she knows I'm going to be sitting in the car for a while. She says, I'm going to go shopping. You don't mind sitting here? He said, oh, no, it's okay. I have my Bhagavad Gita. But it just so happened to be that particular day, his wife went shopping near the temple, near Pinuf. So he decided to come to the temple instead. So he pulled out. He said, I have my Bhagavad Gita. I've read it 36 times. And he said, I can go on reading it again and again and again and again. And he went on talking for at least a half hour, just Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita. Then he started telling me how he and his wife, every night they sit down and they read Prabhupada, Leelamrita. He says, his wife won't read Bhagavad Gita, but she'll read Prabhupada, Leelamrita. So every night together, they read about Srila Prabhupada. And you know, like, just one's seeing Prabhupada at the airport in Montreal, and this man's like, life is completely transformed, you know. And you can go...
It's like the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a moment's association.
Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha Sava Siddhi Hoy. Yes, Lava Matra Sadhu. Yeah. There's so many stories. I mean, we can go on and on and on telling how people's lives were... And changes, transformation that took place in their heart, you know, just by seeing an example. This is a nice story. I want to tell this. This is a nice Prabhupada story. It's not directly related, but it's so nice. Guru Gauranga Prabhu told me this story a couple of years ago. And he was telling me that that when Prabhupada was in Geneva in 1974, Guru Gauranga had invited Prabhupada to come because he kind of opened up the preaching in Switzerland. And he asked Prabhupada, and Prabhupada agreed to come. And therefore, Guru Gauranga was preparing for the Prabhupada's visit by going and approaching different dignitaries and asking them, if they would come and meet his spiritual master. So there was one particular dignitary, I can't remember who it was. I failed this. But he said he was a real important person, some kind of a diplomat. And he was kind of resistant to the idea. And so he thought that he would wait a while. And he went back a second time and asked him one more time. He said, my spiritual master is coming. Would you come and meet him? He'll be here very shortly. He's coming here. So after the second time, he finally agreed. So when Prabhupada came to Geneva, he said that... many people came to meet Prabhupada, sat, and Prabhupada was very inspired. Different people that come to meet him, they're asking him questions and things like that. And, you know, he felt really good about the preliminary work he had done to arrange for these different meetings for Prabhupada. So this real important person finally came to meet Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was sitting in a room behind a table on the floor, and the man came. And he welcomed him, and he brought him into Prabhupada's room. And the man sat down in front of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said to him, so you have any questions? And the man just said, no. And Guru Gauranga explained, as he was telling his story, like he was really crestfallen, you know, because he thought, you know, here's somebody that, you know, Prabhupada wants to preach. And the man almost seemed like, no. Like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, sort of like. So Prabhupada turned to Guru Gauranga and said, bring the harmonium. So Guru Gauranga brought the harmonium, and Prabhupada just sat in front of the harmonium, opened up, and started playing the harmonium, chanting Hare Krishna. And he just continued for, like, he said 10, 15, 20 minutes, like, just absorbed in chanting. And the man very respectfully just sat there. and listened as Prabhupada chanted. And then Prabhupada finally finished chanting and he looked at the man and said, "This is what we do." That was it. No questions asked, all answers given. "This is what we do." And then he turned to Guru Gauranga and said, "Give him some prasadam." Classic Prabhupada. he just kind of Prabhupada, you know, and Guru Gauranga says as he was sitting and watching Prabhupada, it's like Prabhupada actually went to the spiritual world and he was like beckoning him, like, "Why don't you come join us, you know?" You know, to this man. While Guru Gauranga was telling the stories, I have to admit, I mean, tears were just flowing down his face. You know, just like he couldn't stop crying. Because if you talk to Guru Gauranga, I mean, he has deep love for Prabhupada. And he'll tell you, if you ask him, "Why do you have so much love for Prabhupada?" What's his answer? "Because Prabhupada was so genuine. Was so genuine. Indelible. Indelible." I mean, he hasn't been in the association so much. Recently he's more in the Guru Gauranga. But that indelible impression was there in the heart. And at any time, any given time you ask him, and probably his answer is because Prabhupada was so genuine. So, anyways, this is Prabhupada's method of distributing Krishna consciousness, and therefore he could be so uncompromising and in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. I'm sure many of you have stories. One of my favorite stories of Prabhupada's uncompromising presentation of Krishna consciousness, I really like this. Hari Sari told me this story. I'm sure it's been told many times and others heard it. But I'm repeating it the way Hari Sari told it to me. Maybe it's written differently. But he was telling me that how Prabhupada was invited to Jagannath Puri to inaugurate a book for some local person who had written the book. And he invited different dignitaries to come and to have an inauguration ceremony. And just want to see what time it is. And there were different speakers came, and they told different words of praise for the author of the book, about the book, the benefits of the book. And Prabhupada was sort of like the last speaker. I think he was the last speaker, actually. And after everyone else had spoken, then Prabhupada was asked to speak. So it was a big pandal, like thousands of people there. And Prabhupada just stood there and started preaching right from the go about why are not Western Vaishnavas are not allowed inside Jagannath Temple. Don't you know that Lord Jagannath is the Lord of the universe? He's not just the Lord of the Orients, you know. You know, like, he's really coming forth strong, uncompromising. And the organizers of the event, they started to become a little restless. And they were on the side of the stage. And they're trying to get his attention. They're going, "Swamiji, Swamiji." And Prabhupada just... You're like, just getting his point across. And finally they got a little, "Swamiji, Swamiji, the book, Swamiji, the book." And then Prabhupada turns and says, "Huh?" And then after Prabhupada finished, he said, "Oh." He took the book in his hand and said, "This book is inaugurated." And he threw it on the table and walked off the stage. Prabhupada. He's like, "Okay, what else can you do?" It's such this classic Prabhupada. And he could do it. You know? Of course, Prabhupada said many times, "I can do it because I'm old man. This is what you should not imitate." But hey, time's come, isn't it? It didn't take that long, you know? So, Prabhupada was a walking heart transformer. You know, it's like wherever he would go, you know, he was just making bhakti accessible. So, anyways, the reason why I brought up that point was about the translation of the verse I was going to read from the fifth canto of, I think, the verse I was referring to. And I wanted to read that verse, so, and I have a little time left. So I'll just read the verse. Svastyastu vishvasya kala prasidatam jayantu bhutani shivam mitodiya manascha padham bhajata dadhoksajay aveshyatam no matir apyaituki. And may there be good fortune throughout the universe. Oh yeah, this is where I was saying yesterday, kala. Svasti means auspiciousness, astu, let there be. Vishvasya, of the entire universe. Kala, the envious. Almost everyone. Prasidatam, let them be pacified. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. For by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Shri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Purport. The following verse describes a Vaishnava. Vancha kalpa turubhyas cha, kripa sindubhya eva cha, patitanam pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Just like a desire tree, a Vaishnava can fulfill all the desires of anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet. Prahlad Maharaj is a typical Vaishnava. He prays not for himself, but for all living entities, the gentle, the envious, and the mischievous. He always thought of the welfare of mischievous persons like his father, Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj did not ask for anything for himself. Rather, he prayed for the Lord to excuse his demoniac father. This is the attitude of a Vaishnava, who always thinks of the welfare of the entire universe. In other words, there's more, but the point that Prabhupada's making is that because Prahlad Maharaj, being the Vaishnava, who embodied this prayer of being always absorbed in thought of Krishna, and being totally non-envious and fully pacified by his full engagement in devotional service, he was so self-satisfied that being self-satisfied and non-envious and pacified in this way, in that state of mind, one can actually think of others' welfare. Whereas a person who's envious, distracted, disturbed by, you know, such thoughts, attachment or material attachments, or not being able to see the good in others and finding faults in others. Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually speaks about that here in Bhakti Loka also, that mentality. The point is that one can't actually think of others' real highest welfare. And Prabhupada explains in the next part of the commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Dharma are meant for persons who are completely free of envy. Paramanimatsarana. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays in this verse, Kala Prasidatam. May all the envious persons be pacified. The material world is full of envious persons. But if one frees himself of envy, he becomes liberal in his social dealings. I can think of others' welfare. Anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness and engages himself completely in the service of the Lord cleanses his mind of all envy. Manascha bhadram bhajata dadhoksajay. Therefore, we should pray to Lord Nrisingadev to sit in our hearts. We should pray, Bahir Nrisingo, Hridaye Nrisingha. Let Lord Nrisingadev sit in the core of my heart, killing all my bad propensities. Let my mind become clean, so that I may peacefully worship the Lord and bring peace to the entire world. Actually, there's a very nice point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I'll get back to this, but if I can find it quickly, and I think I can. In Bhakti Loka, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his discussion on the topic of patience, he makes up a very nice point. He says, by the quality of daya, or patience, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. Actually, I'll start. If he says, for the practitioner of devotional service, daya or patience is extremely necessary. Those who possess the quality of daya are called dhira, soba. Due to the lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. By the quality of daya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. And then he quotes the verse, Vajravegam Manasakrodavegam. So, I've spoken about this actually, and I think it was in Ottawa before, and I won't go into too much detail, but the essence that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about, when he says those who are impatient cannot do any work, it's very important to understand that this, all these essays are for sadhakas. And you oftentimes will read, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, oh sadhakas, oh, you know, those of you who are engaged in sadhana. So when he says those who are impatient cannot do any work, he's not talking about people can't sit in a traffic jam for, you know, for 3 hours in the morning to drive to work. You know, people can, you know, can do that. But he's not talking about that type of work. He's actually talking about internal work, because he's talking to sadhakas. So specifically he says that those who are impatient cannot do the internal work on themselves. And this, therefore he says that the quality of daya, by the quality of patience, a practitioner who does internal work, he controls first himself, and then he controls the whole world. So the point essentially is that when he is Vachovegam Manasakrodavegam, he quotes the verse that a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So essentially, the person who controls himself, you know, first, then by controlling himself, others, he can control others, not by manipulation. But he controls others because people actually see, here's an example, and they'll say, yes, how do I get like that? How do I become like that? And I told in the past this story. It was something I read. It's not in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but I read it. It was a story about Raghunath Das Goswami. And in his youth, as we all know, Raghunath Das was the son of Govardhan Majumdar, and he was a very wealthy landholder. And he wanted Govardhan. Oh, who was it? Balaram Ramacharya, his family. It was a disciple of Haridas Thakur. Balaram Ramacharya was the family priest, and he was a disciple of Haridas Thakur. So Haridas Thakur was one time visiting in the house of Balaramacharya. And of course he was totally absorbed in the holy name of the Lord. And when Govardhan Majumdar heard that Haridas Thakur was nearby, he wanted Raghunath Das to go and to get a blessing from Haridas Thakur. So he asked Balaramacharya to arrange to bring Raghunath Das to Haridas Thakur. And he presented a big cartload of gifts to offer to Haridas Thakur. And he thought for sure that if I give him very nice, precious gifts, jewels, silks, and nice things, Haridas Thakur will certainly give my son a good benediction. You know, that's what he wanted. He wanted the best for his son, nothing but the best. So, Balaramacharya was asked to bring Raghunath Das to Haridas, and Govardhan Majumdar sent, because Raghunath Das was always surrounded by servants and guards, because he was really, really excessively protected by his father. And this is all described in this biography I had been reading about Raghunath Das Goswami. So Balaramacharya took Raghunath Das, the cartload of gifts, and the guards, and the servants, all to Haridas Thakur. And then Balaramacharya introduced to Haridas Thakur and said, "This is Raghunath. He's the son of Govardhan Majumdar, and he sent these nice gifts for you." But Haridas Thakur, of course, paid no attention whatsoever. He wasn't flattered, impressed, allured in any way by the offering that was sent to him. And then Balaram and Pacharya knew that Haridas Thakur would not be influenced by these things and said that Govardhan has asked that you give a benediction to his son, Raghunath Das. So Haridas Thakur gave him a benediction, but at the same time Balaramacharya knew that it wasn't going to be exactly what Govardhan expected it. So he made the loud sound so that the benediction could not be heard. And Haridas Thakur said, "I give you the benediction that you'll renounce the whole world." And then when Balaramacharya brought Raghunath Das back to Govardhan Majumdar, Govardhan asked, "So you met Haridas Thakur?" "Yes," and he asked all the servants and the guards, "What did he give my son for a benediction?" And they all said, "Well, we don't know, we didn't hear it." And then they had to go to Balaramacharya. And then he asked Balaramacharya, "So what did you, did Haridas Thakur give him a benediction? Did he accept the offerings?" He said, "What, you know?" And Balaramacharya said, "Oh yes, he gave a benediction." "Well, what was it?" "He said that your son will possess the whole world." And then, of course, Govardhan Majumdar was in ecstasy. Like, "Here, I own this whole tract of land, and my son's going to hold the whole world." You know, he was ecstatic. And then, but the hidden meaning of that is that how could he renounce the whole world unless he had previously possessed it? So, in other words, the hidden meaning was that he could control the whole world because nothing in this world would ever allure him. He would not be allured by any wealth, nor by any beauty, nor by any fame, nor by anything. So one who actually is in control of his mind and senses can actually control the whole world, because nothing in this world can control him. So that example is, of course, and Raghunath Das Goswami, you know, was the embodiment of sense control. I mean, his austerities, as described, were like the lines of stone. You know, his renunciation. He was so strict. So, essentially, the point is that when a person becomes peaceful, his mind and his senses are controlled, he will not be allured by the temptations of this world. And then, because he's not allured, he controls himself first, and then he can conquer the whole world, which means that he can actually think of the welfare of others, because he won't be compromised in any way in his as Prabhupada was, in his uncompromising way of giving Krishna to everyone. In an uncompromising way. He wasn't allured by fame, wasn't allured by wealth, power. He was allured by one thing only, and that was Krishna's pleasure and pleasure of his spiritual master. So Prabhupada says here that the symptom of a person who's become freed from envy is that he's liberal in his dealings with others. And that's how Prabhupada was. He was very, sometimes he was strict. But if you read these early days, you know, Prabhupada, yena tena pakarina mana Krishna navesha yet. There's a duty to the spiritual master to first give them Krishna and then let everything else come later. And as we all know, how everybody in the ashram was totally shocked one day when Prabhupada put up a little notice in the ashram saying, from this day on, everybody has to follow these regulative principles. No meeting, no illicit sex, no intoxication. Nobody had heard that, you know, like in such a formal way before. Prabhupada was liberal, but because he gave them Krishna, he attracted them to Krishna by embodying Krishna's devotional service himself. Therefore, by first giving them Krishna consciousness in a very completely non-envious way, he was able to introduce gradually a way for others to become strict themselves. So, that is, as he describes right here in this verse, let me just go back to, I want to finish the fifth canto commentary, and we're supposed to end by 7, which is just a few minutes from now. So, no, actually, I think I'm going to end at 7 because, to tell you the truth, my back is. So he said, let Lord Nrisimhadev sit in the core of my heart, killing all my bad propensities. Let my mind become clean so that I may peacefully worship the Lord and bring peace to the entire world. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has given a very fine purport in this regard. Whenever one offers a prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one always requests some benediction from Him. Even pure and nishkama devotees pray for some benediction, as instructed by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Sikshastaka. Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam bodhau kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintaya. O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servitor, yet somehow or other I have fallen to the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from the ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. In another prayer, Lord Chaitanya says, Mama Janmani Jamanishwari, Bhava Tad Bhaktira Haituki Twayi, life after life, kindly let me have unalloyed love and devotion at your lordship's lotus feet. When Prahlad Maharaj chants Om Namo Bhagavate Narasinghaya, he prays for a benediction from the Lord. But because he is also an exalted Vaishnava, he wants nothing for his personal sense gratification. The first desire expressed in his prayer is Svastyastu Vishvasya, let there be good fortune throughout the entire universe. Prahlad Maharaj thus requested the Lord to be merciful to everyone, including his father, a most envious person. According to Chanakya Pandit, there are two kinds of envious living entities. One is a snake, and the other is the man like Hiranyakashipu, who is by nature envious of everyone, even of his father or son. Hiranyakashipu was envious of his little son, Prahlad. But Prahlad Maharaj asked a benediction for the benefit of his father. Hiranyakashipu was very envious of devotees, but Prahlad wished that his father and other demons like him would give up their envious nature by the grace of the Lord and stop harassing the devotees, Kala Prasiddhatam. The difficulty is that the Kala, envious living entity, is rarely pacified. One kind of Kala, the snake, can be pacified simply by mantras or by the action of a particular herb. Mantro sati svasha sarpakalakenam nivaryate. An envious person, however, cannot be pacified by any means. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that all envious persons may undergo a change of heart and think of the welfare of others. If the Krishna consciousness movement spreads all over the world, and if by the grace of Krishna everyone accepts it, the thinking of envious people will change. Everyone will think of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays, Shiva Mitodhya. In material activities, everyone is envious of others, but in Krishna consciousness, no one is envious of anyone else. Everyone thinks of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that everyone's mind may become gentle by being fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna, bhajatadarhoksache, as indicated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam Savaya Manak Krishna Padara Vindayo, and as advised by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 1865, Man Manam Bhava Mad Bhakta, one should constantly think of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Then one's mind will certainly be cleansed, Chaito Dharpana Majanam. Materialists always think of sense gratification, but Prahlad Maharaj prays that the Lord's mercy will change their minds and they will stop thinking of sense gratification. If they think of Krishna always, everything will be all right. Some people argue that if everyone thought of Krishna in that way, the whole universe would be vacated because everyone would go back home, back to Godhead. However, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that this is impossible. Because the living entities are innumerable. If one set of living entities is actually delivered by the Krishna consciousness movement, another set will fill the entire universe. Prabhupada Kijai. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Any comments or questions? Yes, Lakshmi. Yes, Prabhu.
One of the things that most of the hippies in those days could see the hypocrisy of the leaders, and that made it difficult for us to want to surrender. But somehow Prabhupada, we could convey that sincerity. We knew Prabhupada was going to cheat us. Somehow we didn't know much of the philosophy, but somehow Prabhupada was able to draw that faith in us, that here was someone genuine who wasn't going to. Then he was presenting something, and it was going to be good for us if we took to it. And that was the inspiring thing. Of course, the philosophy, everything came later, but I know, at least for myself, that was my initial impression, that here was someone that...
A hypocrite.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't going to cheat me or exploit me in any way. So I could surrender here. It was a place I could surrender.
Some other comments? Gokulananda Prabhu?
Yes. Thank you so much, actually. It was so nice to be, dive into the ocean of Prabhupada Katha and Prabhupada's qualities. In fact, just like that prayer, Ambarish Maharaj, Savaimanak Krishna Padara Vinayo, Gunanuvala. But Samsivai Kunta Gunanuvalanani, he's all absorbing and remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So Krishna shares his opulences and qualities with his pure devotees. Because Krishna is Param Satyam, the supreme truth, everything about him is perfect and true, and Prabhupada partakes of that perfection of always being true, genuine, real, and in fact, Prabhupada created many, many genuine persons amongst his followers. That's the shining quality of devotees, that you can become very attracted to them, and you want to have nice, genuine relationships because you can trust devotees. Like you're ready to confide yourself to devotees and open up and really share beautiful things, and even share difficult things or whatever. But you can have that natural trust, and Prabhupada was so beautifully trustworthy, and that remains our the perfect example.
Our guiding light.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, in other words, when we actually think, I'm sorry, if you...
Yes.
I don't want to
totally
cut you off.
Totally, like that.
That Acharya means to teach by his example, and Prabhupada, teaching by his example, expected that others would actually also follow his example and actually distribute Krishna consciousness by the same method that he distributed. And Prabhupada's method was, this was his method for distributing. This is what made it so accessible, so attractive. And teach by example means that somebody needs to be taught. It's not just like, it's just like a one-off event. That if he's actually successful in teaching by example, then hopefully some people will learn from that example and actually try to adopt the same method of distribution that Prabhupada taught by his example for his followers. Oops, another one. Damodar Gopal would be proud.
You know, there's one little story.
Yes, exactly on that theme, actually, we go back to the beginning, because Prabhupada was setting the example in everything in the most minute detail, you know. Of course, devotees took a while to wake up to the fact that they had this amazing saint in their midst, you know. But when some devotees finally got a little bit clued in to how great or pure Prabhupada was, therefore they were following Prabhupada around like ducklings, eh? Like, you know. And Prabhupada was encouraging, and he said, yes, you can all do as I am doing. So, in other words, he was encouraging, not exactly imitation, but, you know, to mold our behavior on Prabhupada's perfect example, eh? Yet, towards the end, Prabhupada warned us, do not imitate,
right,
but follow in the footsteps.
Follow
in other words, become genuine. Don't pretend.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's very nice that Prabhupada gave us such a perfect example. You know, of course, how far he is above us. It's, but still a connection.
But yeah. It's so accessible.
Yes.
And that's, you know, really, I mean, that's the duty of his followers, to make that perfect example accessible, not only by their own example, but always pointed to Prabhupada's example, is that we're all following. You know, then everybody's reminded that, that, you know, the example was set by our founder Acharya. He is the guiding light. You know, and anything else that comes after that is only due to his potency, his purity, and his desire that we actually follow his instructions.
Yes, sir, that Prabhupada made us his followers, like Prabhupada Anugas. It's just the most amazing miracle, actually, because what was our qualification? I'm still astounded by that whole fact, you know. How great mercy is. That the mercy, the Lord Chaitanya is muda odarya, to give, no matter to who or any time, anyone, you know. Everyone's qualified by having no qualification. That's, he opened it up to everyone. And Prabhupada had the same mood, eh? He didn't seek out the most sophisticated people, eh? He went to the very unsophisticated, but he worked his miracle by his love and perfect genuineness.
I often quote Sadh Goswami Mastakam, how they were kind to both the gentle and the ruffians. Okay, yes?
Maharaj, you told that story about the guru who danced and then glorified Prabhupada.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a very short anecdote of a very similar thing. It was in France, near New Maipur, in the 80s. There was an ashram of Yogi Bhajan, the Sikh group. And we all went to visit them. A few times we had exchanged programs. They came to our place, we went to their place. And one time we went to their place, and Indrajana Swami and Bibi Govinda Maharaj and myself went to speak to Yogi Bhajan. In the course of the talk, he was saying, "We are Kshatriyas. We like a little hanky-panky. But your Prabhupada, he is a Paka Brahmin. You do what he says."
Prabhupada was heavy with Yogi Bhajan. That conversation when he invited him to the Unity of Man conference. You know, Prabhupada said, "There'll be no unity." Write that down in your book. Yeah. Bhaktivedanta Swami says, "There'll be no unity."
But you know, Yogi Bhajan accepted it.
Huh?
Yeah, he actually. actually had a submissive attitude towards Prabhupada. He was ready to be corrected, because he could also recognize Prabhupada's genuineness.
Right.
And therefore, Prabhupada started praising him. He said, yes, you are the Sikh community. They have always protected the Vaishnavas. So you continue in that way. He encouraged him. It was a nice justification.
It was a long conversation.
Yeah. You know why he did.
Yeah. Okay, I think, forgive me, I'm going to end here. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna, question probably.